those bells? The requiem for the newsrooms of America, as the hypocrites of corrupt corporate media that has killed itself, met with each other at a grand dinner in a ballroom in Washington, yucking it up over how smart they are and how dumb the rest of us are. And to talk about that, the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and other things, media, politics, culture, none other than Tom Bevin, co-founder and president of RealClearPolitics.com, and a guy who's allowing me to reprint and republish articles from a group that he's involved with, Real Clear Investigations, which has an amazing series on religion and freedom. Joining us, as always, is Jeff Carlin, my friend, future physics teacher, and a guy who, you know, loves pies and cats, but I'm trying to get him to love sausage. Maybe we'll talk about that another time. But for right now, Tom Bevin, Jeff Carlin, and me, John Cass, johncassnews.com, on media, politics, culture, and the pity party. And where are you as those bells ring and old man Biden is puffing up his chest, telling everybody he's ready to be president again in his late 80s? In his late 80s. You're on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago Way, absolutely.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
The Chicago Way. That's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
The media world is topsy-turvy as we speak. Tucker Carlson is being attacked relentlessly by the so-called conservatives of Fox News. We have CNN inviting President Donald Trump on a panel show or a town hall where he can tell everyone how he basically manipulated the entire country and most of those Fox viewers into hating CNN, and now he's sucking up to them. I don't know what else. And the pity party for Kim Fox continues. And to make sense of all this is our friend Tom Bevin, co-founder and president, Real Clear Politics. Good morning, Tom. Welcome to the Chicago Way. Hey, buddy.
How you doing, John? Yeah, good to be back with you.
It's so good. So what do you make of all? First of all, I need to know how the White House Correspondents' Dinner was, because the last time I was at one, there was this Italian guy in a tuxedo, and he comes up to me and he's like, "Do you have a cigarette? I don't smoke, but do you have a cigarette?" I'm like, "Yeah, sure." I gave him a Camel, and he's like, "Camel, He gave offered some pleasantries. And I was thinking, what do I say that's witty to Anton Scalia? What do I have that's witty?
Nice.
But it was a pleasant evening. That remark was pleasant. And we had, who was sitting at our table? That was the days when we cared who sat at our table. Oh, the guy who backed Barack Obama from the Supreme Court, Justice Roberts, was our guest, Tribune's guest, typical corporate Tribune. Corporate justice. But I've fallen out with those guys. I don't go to those events. I don't get invited. Tom, I wasn't invited to the event. So tell me what happened.
Well, so you know, I started going to these things, I want to say 2010, 2011, something like that. And, you know, it was the first time you go. I mean, it's exciting, right? We felt like as a small independent media organization to actually get a table through the White House Correspondents Association, you know, we were kind of like, we've arrived, you know, we've made it. We got invited to the big kids, you know, the cool kids party or whatever. Right. And
we're establishment in the establishment.
I mean, it was an affirming thing for us. And so the first, you know, the first year, first couple of years, it was like an event and it was exciting. Then the novelty wears off and it becomes more of a chore. And then finally, I mean, you know, Donald Trump didn't go to any of these things, which made them less interesting. And then there was COVID for a couple of years. And so I didn't go this year. I haven't gone in a number of years, and because of COVID and because of Trump. So I was actually drove my seventh grader down to Southern Illinois University for the, I was at the state science fair. Okay. That was my, Yes, indeed.
Jeff is turgid with excitement because he's a future science teacher.
That's right.
Yes. But Carl Cannon, our Washington bureau chief, and he's been going to that thing for years and years and years. I mean, like decades. He's covered, I think, four presidents, and you know, he's a, he's more of a fan of it than I am. I think he still enjoys the, you know, and he was there when it used to be what it was designed to be when it first started, and it's been going over 100 years. It was an opportunity for a press corps that was oftentimes at odds with the administration, antagonistic toward the administration, that they would lay down their arms and everybody would get together and, you know, the president would come and, you know, they'd tell some jokes and everyone would just have a fine, lovely evening. That was the deal.
I raise my glass and we shall sing the Whiff and Poof song or something like that, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So they're hail and well met fellows. Yes.
You know, it progressively turned into more of a sort of explicitly partisan affair as the media, and this really happened, I would say most dramatically during, you know, George W. Bush, the press was tough on him, but he would go to these things and he would, you know, make fun of himself. I mean, a couple of the best dinners. Yeah. He would play along. And then when it moved into the Obama era though, you know, the press was so in the tank for Obama and it got really, the talent, you know, the comedians got much more partisan. Obviously, that was one of the years when Obama made, and the comedian, I think it was Seth Meyers, made such vicious attacks on Donald Trump, who was sitting at the ABC table right in front of them, mm-hmm. that he, as he later said, that was the moment he decided he was going to run for president. As he stormed out of the White House Correspondents' Dinner that year. So, and it's just become, and then again, with the way that the media, you know, declared themselves to be part of the resistance against Donald Trump. And now to go back and, you know, they're yucking it up again with each other, with Biden. Biden's telling jokes about how he doesn't take questions at press conferences and the press is sitting there, you know, clapping and laughing as if they think that he's laughing with them instead of at them.
They're all in on the inside joke.
Yeah, I mean, it confirmed all the worst things about the press and the reason that the public doesn't trust the press. It's become a real symbol of all of the things that are wrong with our current situation in both the media and Washington. And so for that reason, it's, you know, I think it's become much, much less relevant to a broader audience. And again, Carl said, you know, he thought Biden's remarks were not great. They were overly partisan. I mean, he made one joke about his age, but a lot of the jokes were at the expense of Tucker Carlson and Fox News and, you know, Donald Trump and Republicans in general. And so it is what it is. It's just, it's unfortunate that the media has gotten to a point where the public, I mean, I guess the nice way of saying it is the public doesn't trust them. there are certain segments of the population that actually despise the media. And, you know, so it's just, it's become a symbol of all that's wrong.
Yeah. And I mean, what do they call it? Prom for journalism nerds?
Nerd prom.
Yeah. Nerd prom. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
but you can see all the celebrities are back this year, you know, Chrissy Teigen and John Legend and all, you know, that's the other thing. I mean, it used to be, and this happened during Bill Clinton, is when he sort of was the celebrity president. He was friends, you know, doing Arsenio Hall and playing the saxophone and all that crap. And so that was when it became the deal that you would invite celebrities to your table. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, initially it was like, well, you'd invite, you know, senators,
Justice Roberts,
Justice Scalia, people who were involved with government and governing and politics. And then it became, I mean, 1 year I was there, it was an entire table. And I think it was Fox News that did this, because I think I remember Greta Van Susteren was sitting at the table. It was Kim Kardashian and Kris Jenner, the mom, and I think Khloe and one of the, I mean, like these, you know, people have any business this dinner. So that aspect of it was injected in the 90s and became, you know, a thing too, which I think further trivialized it.
Did Carl mention anything about the food? Is that always a good thing? Like,
no,
I always wonder about these things. It's like prom food. Like, it's terrible.
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, it is amazing to be in the Hilton in that ballroom, which holds, I mean, you're in there with 2,500, 3,000 people. I mean, it's massive. And it is jam packed, and I always marvel at how they manage to serve that many people at one time. You know, the waiters are all bringing out the plates, and it's all right there. It's pretty amazing.
John, you've been there,
logistically
right?
speaking.
You've done large scale catering, right?
I've been on both sides of it. I did not serve Charles Krautheimer and George Will. Well, I would have loved to have served them a crow sandwich. Even though respect to Charles Krautheimer, when it came out that they invited Barack Obama to lunch at Krautheimer's Georgetown home so that they could explain the way of Washington to him. I remember hearing about that. I was cringing just thinking about it.
Oh.
But you run out and you serve the people, and you keep your mouth shut, and you don't try to look down the cleavage of the beautiful celebrities.
Well,
that's from a waiter's point of view, a young waiter's point of view. I've done that.
Absolutely.
It's like that scene in Caddyshack where Danny Noonan's serving the butter.
Oh, it's so good. Well, speaking of interesting events, so this weekend we had the big guy Biden announcing he's going to run again. What was your reaction to that, there, Tom?
So Biden is. I mean, first of all, I don't think we've ever seen a president announce their reelection by, you know, putting out a 3-minute video at 7 a.m.
Right.
It was kind of underwhelming.
Yeah.
And look, we'll see what happens. Democrats don't want him to run. I mean, they just don't. There's majorities of Democrats do not want, they like him.
But he's
they
got
support
his,
him.
He's got his insurance policy.
They did really want to see, you know, give him the gold watch and usher him off the stage and turn to someone else. And I'm not sure that's Kamala Harris necessarily, but someone else.
Bingo. Notice that Tom did not say Kamala Harris is in the line because they don't want her anywhere near.
Yeah. So, but I think the presumption is that, you know, Donald Trump's going to, you know, he's running again. He's leading substantially in the polls. And, you know, Biden thinks that he can beat Trump and he's already done it. And so, but it's going to be a challenge for him. I mean, his numbers are terrible. He's 80 years old. He's got a lot of, he's, you know, when you look at the asset and liability ledger, he's got some assets, but he's also got some real liabilities that Republicans are going to, I think, make a lot of hay with, during the campaign. So we'll see. I mean, he's, you know, when you look at the national polls right now, the national matchups, he's trailing Trump by I think less than a percentage point in, you know, hypothetical matchups, and he's trailing DeSantis by about a point and a half. But it's close, and it's all the same states, and it's they're going to run the exact same playbook. I mean, Biden's announcement was, you know, we got to finish the job of protecting, you know, democracy and abortion rights and all the same stuff that they ran on in 2022 successfully, by the way. So it's going to be a hard fought rerun of 2020. Which was, you know, obviously happened during COVID, but it was an awful campaign. And I suspect Biden's going to do, you know, he's not going to be aggressively campaigning around the country. I think he's going to, he can't do what he did during COVID, which is stay in the basement the entire time. But he'll do some modified version of that where he's doing smaller events. He's, you know, campaigning sort of lightly and trying to make sure that all of the focus is on, you know, probably Donald Trump and all of his flaws and his baggage, reminding independent voters and women and all those, all of those voters why they, you know, he's the least worst of the options available to them.
Yeah. What a sad state of affairs that we have one president who's, you know, maybe we get to that in the side, but is being investigated in multiple various ways when that's just awful on its own. But, and then you got another president who may be, you know, he's gonna be in his eighties. And you're like, this is it. This is the best democracy you can do right now.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, come on, guys.
A race to the bottom, Jeff and Tom.
It certainly is. It certainly is. Tom, do you think that announcement video, it was so much Kamala in that they're trying to send some signal? Because I can't read that. Like, I don't understand the point of trying to push her that hard in that thing, because she showed up. I haven't seen her on TV that much in the last 2 years.
Yeah. Well, there was obviously a lot of speculation about whether he was going to dump her for somebody else. And I think she's obviously, we've read stories about how her office and her supporters are dissatisfied with the way she's been treated by the Biden, you know, team Biden, giving her crappy assignments, don't give her enough respect and yada, yada, yada. So I think that was part of trying to signal to everybody, bring everybody together and say, you know, we're full speed ahead, the two of us, try and unify the party as much as possible and smooth over any, you know, bruised feelings or egos that are out there. Because it will need, I think both parties need to be as unified as humanly possible heading into a general election.
The Republican fantasy, I think, well, one of them, is to have Kamala under attack by people like Pete Buttigieg, and then have him served to the voters, particularly Black Democratic voters, in pieces as she cuts him up. And I don't think that will fly. You can't really, a Democrat trying to take out Kamala Harris won't work. Particularly given that without Black voters, there is no Democratic Party. And I just see a problem there. They have to get rid of her because they have to move on. But I don't see how they can do that. I don't really see
it. It's going to be difficult. And quite frankly, she's going to be part of this campaign. It's been discussed. And the subtext of this campaign is, you know, if you're voting to reelect a guy who's 80 years old, you know, actuarial tables will say that there's a, you know, 50-50 chance he doesn't make it to the end of his second term. He'd be 86 when he finishes.
Right.
You know, you're casting a vote, or at least half a vote, or, you know, some percentage of your vote is going toward a potential reality that Kamala Harris will assume the office. And again, that's not going to be that's the subtext to this entire campaign. And so for that reason, I think the Democrats Biden needs to boost her as much as they can.
You've saved Fox. Fox News now has an opportunity. They just hire Willie Brown as the as the 8 o'clock 8 o'clock host. Carry the ball. Right.
Right. Yeah.
You should do that.
Oh my gosh, that would be something, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be.
They do have a hole to fill there, don't they?
They do. That's another big story that I think is.
What do you think of it?
Continues to evolve. Well, I mean, listen. I think that there's a lot of misdirection. I mean, I tweeted this a while ago. I mean, in general, you know, a lot of the stuff you read is BS. But in a circumstance like this, where you have all of these competing agendas and everybody's leaking, and I think it's probably closer to, you know, 80-90% of everything that's in the press is you know, either not true or showing up for various reasons that are not the actual reasons. I think a lot of the stuff, I mean, if you've seen the stuff that's been leaked just over the last couple of days to Media Matters, they're posting these clips of Tucker Carlson claiming that they're, you know, creepy and, you know, sexist and misogynist. And then you watch the actual clips. He's just being funny. He's joking. He's clearly joking. The New York Times released this text the other night and, you know, portrayed it as him saying something racist and violent. And that's the headline now, CNN, Huffington Post, all these organizations, Tucker Carlson's racist tweet. If you read that tweet, he talks about, in fact, he's watching this video of three Trump supporters beating the crap out of this Antifa kid. And he was like, he felt himself as he was watching it. He wanted them to beat him up. I mean, he kind of had this bloodlust going, and then he kind of had this revelation, this epiphany where he stepped back and he said, listen, this isn't good. I shouldn't be feeling this way. He's, you know, this guy, I may not agree with this Antifa kid in any way, but he is a kid. He's someone's brother, someone's son, perhaps someone's wife or husband. And, you know, I need to have more humanity and I shouldn't gloat over the fact he's getting, beaten up. And, you know, pretty thoughtful tweet. Yeah. And yet that's not the headline. Tough. The headline is all about the fact that he used this phrase, it's not how white men fight. And that is being used to tar him as, you know, being racist somehow, which again, I don't even get that, but
I think it's a defense of, it's a reaction to a lot of the video that we see from, you know, attacks on stores and where people start fighting each other. But good point that you make, Tom. I shouldn't gloat over his suffering. I should be bothered by it. I should remember that somewhere somebody probably loves this kid. And I would be crushed and would be crushed if he were killed. I don't care about those things. If I reduce people to their politics, how am I better than he is? But social media and the left have been doing that forever, for at least the last 10 years, reducing us to our politics and taking our humanity away and making it okay to attack us. You know, so I don't.
I've never been a big Tucker guy. I mean, I've always seen him as kind of a charlatan of sorts. You know, he does his bit. He's got a target demographic and he's trying to hit them hard with their views and his views and match them up and drive money, which he's done insanely successfully. When I read that clip or that what you just were sharing with us, I read that line, and that line to me jumps off as like questionable. Like, I obviously it stops in my head. I'm like, what the, why would he write that? I don't know if Tucker is the type of guy who's actually like a white nationalist that everyone wants to portray him as, or he just has, you know, a set routine that he does that he's trying to reach an audience that is probably, if we had to weigh them, more likely than not likely to be more white nationalistic, if you will. I'm not saying they're racist, but you know, that's just the target he's going after to an extent. I would wonder if this guy is just putting out things that are like, oh yeah, that's just what I would think. But then I come down to this part where he's like, oh yeah, I'm a human. Like, that's the stuff, like you're saying, that's the thing that's humanistic. All the other crap before that is him being, well, my first thought was this. And then I realized that I'm a human. They're a human. We're all humans. Let's not. Why are we doing this? And I've never seen that from Tucker. And I would like to see more from Tucker. That last part of it kind of altered the way I see Tucker. in a positive way. The rest of it didn't really mean anything to me. It's just Tucker being Tucker. So I'm with you guys at the point where I think like it's piling on at this point. I mean, it's not like the guy's hiding anything. He does his shtick on air every night of the week. So what they're trying to present is what?
The claim is that made by the New York Times is that, well, this was the text that really tipped the scale. And, you know, when the Fox execs saw this, they were like, oh, my gosh, we've got to, you know, we've got to settle this lawsuit with Dominion right. and get rid of Tucker. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that seems just utterly ridiculous to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was I think my take on it is that, you know, Tucker had, although he had the highest rated show or one of the highest rated shows on Fox, he was the only one on that network that talked about, you know, things that the network, you know, some of the people in the network, I think, didn't want talked about. Right. Mm-hmm. He talked about the Ukraine war. He talked about all these things. And they just had enough of it and wanted to get rid of him. I mean, from all the reporting that we've seen. And again, you got to be careful when you read this stuff about, you got to sift through all the layers and who's, you know, arguing and, mm-hmm. and claiming what and what their motives are, but that it was made, it was a decision that was made at the very top and that it was made, by all accounts, Tucker didn't see it coming. You know, it was a sort of a decapitation strike. He didn't get mm-hmm. a chance. You know, they were getting ready to do their Monday show and he got the call and said, you're not going on air ever again on this network. And then the other thing we've learned is that, you know, he's been removed from air, but he hasn't necessarily been fired. He's under contract through the end of 2024. Some have reported he was negotiating an extension of his contract. And so Fox has taken him off the air, but he's still under contract. And I'm sure in his contract, he's got, you know, he's got non-disparagement clauses where he can't go out and trash the network. Meanwhile, they're leaking things to the New York Times and Media Matters that are trashing him day in and day out for the past week. And he hasn't said anything. I'm not sure that he's able to say anything. So it's a really crazy situation where the biggest voice for sort of the nationalist populist movement has been taken off the table for the next, you know, foreseeable future all the way through the 2024 election cycle, which is, when you think about it that way, it's kind of crazy.
Right. I mean, that's the thing is that you see Fox News is got to be, they're panicking when they see the slapback on this because the guy is loved. I mean, he's beloved by people. I know people online who talk about it, like they would never miss a single episode. They think everything he says is, you know, exactly the right thing to say. And I think to your point, Tom, that Fox is scrambling to see like, we have been the bad guys here, you know, because the Fox was not the favorite network after Trump lost. Remember, I mean, they were pissed at them for calling it. Now this, I mean, I feel like they've alienated a lot of people who buy gold and
they've killed themselves.
This is the interesting thing, right? Because I think from Fox's perspective, from Rupert Murdoch and you know Lachlan Murdoch. Mm-hmm. And Suzanne Scott, who runs that organization, you know, Megyn Kelly left, Bill O'Reilly got Me Too'd. These were massively popular hosts. Glenn Beck, even before that, left to do his own thing. And the network not only survived, but thrived, right? Yeah. That none of those personalities was bigger than the network. So here comes Tucker and they fire him and basically put him in purgatory and their ratings have in the 8 o'clock slot, not just in eight, but in the surrounding, have collapsed to the point where I think I just saw a story yesterday, MSNBC beat them in prime time.
Right. First time in like 7 years or something, right?
Right. So they have a real problem. And I'm sure the view is, well, this will pass and we'll get back to where we were. And they've been doing some rotating hosts or whatever, but Tucker is, I honestly think he's in a different category because he was, and to your point, Jeff, I mean, I know, I don't know, just off the top of my head, I know probably six people, 10 people maybe, who only watched his show. They didn't watch any other Fox. I mean, there's some people, like my parents, who are in their, you know, late 70s who turn on Fox in the morning and it's just kind of like it's white noise. It's all day. I hate it. No, I can't stand it. I'm like, too. You guys got to turn that
by
off.
Gold, by Melts gold
your brain.
But there are a lot of people who would tune in specifically for his show and then turn it off. And those people are gone and they're not coming back.
Right.
And, you know, depending on how this shakes out and what Tucker ends up doing, it could be a significant shift. I mean, the network could be diminished in a significant way moving forward. So that'll depend on, I think, what Tucker does, where he ends up and kind of how he reinvents himself as a media personality. But it's a big deal. It's a big, big story with huge implications.
I think that Tucker Carlson represents something that frightens Fox News, and that is he is of the aristocracy. He is a child of the aristocracy. He comes from real money, not flashy, I just won the lottery money, but real money. And he talks that game. You know, the J Press ties and all that, he understands it, and he's rejected it. And that's what they're afraid of. And you know what? He can go and fly fish in Maine for the next few weeks, but he can open up his own thing, go independent like so many people have done, because it's really liberating to be independent from the corporate structure. And I think that people will
spoken
follow.
By the voice of experience.
I'm not trying to compare myself. To
no,
Tucker,
right.
I was not suggesting that.
Yeah. But you know what? It was the smartest financial decision I made in my life, because there are people like two Toms, Tom Serafin and Tom Bevan, who pushed me into it. And, People, when they identify with a writer or a personality in the news, they don't like it when the corporate suits come and try to stab that guy, woman in the back. Megyn Kelly's reinvented herself, has made a career, and she allows people to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Allows her, you know, I remember you just tweeted something of Megyn Kelly the other day, Tom. And, I mean, I don't think Fox will recover.
The irony of them trying to, I don't know, disparage Tucker by putting out this type of stuff. And the only people who are it's going to give fodder to are people who don't like Tucker already, or who of the left and are have a vengeance against him. The people who really like Tucker will see that comment and be like, yeah, that's interesting. Like, oh, okay. You know, they already believe what he says and they like what he says. So by Fox going this way, I think you're right. I think it's going to completely backfire.
Well, it would also, I mean, it would be somewhat of a different story if they actually had stuff right. that was damaging.
Right.
They're releasing stuff that's not even remotely damaging. I mean, those clips of him, if you watch them, even the one where he says, and again, they were portrayed as like, you know, sexist and misogynistic and how terrible he called someone's girlfriend yummy. And that's all that was portrayed. And I mean, he was like, oh, Tucker Carlson, you know, creepy, called some girls, you know, some dude's girlfriend yummy. If you actually watch the clip, he says, he stops himself after he says that. And he says, you know, and by the way, in case, you know, this gets pulled down off, he calls it the bird. I don't know what that means exactly, but I'm
the satellite.
And, you know, he says, I'm joking, I'm kidding. And then he's like, F you, Media Matters, you know. And then he says, you know, I've never even met the guy's girlfriend. I have no idea whether she's, you know, attractive or not, and right. and whatever. I was just joking. I mean, it's the exact opposite of what it's being portrayed as. And so I think when you know that kind of situation, it actually people who maybe don't have right. strong opinions formed about Tucker Carlson one way or another would look at that and say, like, he seems kind of normal and funny.
He seems like Stephen Colbert.
He's not being a misogynist, you know? I mean, if that's the best they got, they're strengthening him. Exactly. They're not weakening him.
There's nothing like talking media with
I love talking Tom Bevan. With Tom.
Well, thanks, guys. It's good to be back. It's like putting on an old pair of jeans.
It's great.
Although, in my case, when I try and put on an old pair of jeans, they don't fit. Unlike
yeah, geez. go buy new jeans.
I have to find a tailor.
Amazing.
I'm not going to go to pleated pants, though. I might change my wardrobe and change it into some sort of jester outfit, like a jester.
I have to say, John, in all the years we've known each other, I never thought there'd be a day where you weighed less than I do.
Well, you're a former quarterback. You're a former quarterback, my friend.
Yeah,
come 50 on, years all that ago, muscle up top, rolling out.
One of life's surprises. Weighing more than
there
John
is Katz. Nothing like talking politics and media with my friend Tom Bevan, co-founder, president, boss of Real Clear Politics. And Tom, before we go, I've got to ask you about Real Clear Investigations. I remember messaging you and saying, is this true that we can, if you're in the publishing game, look at me, we can use or repost stuff from Real Clear Politics with permission from Real Clear Politics. Yes?
Yes, true. So Real Clear Investigations. So a few years ago, we started an investigative unit through our foundation, Real Clear Foundation. So it's funded by contributions from ordinary folks to do, some real investigative journalism, which is, it's tough, and it's a piece of the news business that's been shrinking because it's hard to do. It's labor intensive. It's, it requires a lot of money and time and effort.
It's not a hot take.
Right. Yeah. Right. I mean, that's kind of what the opinion business these days is, crank out your hot take. I mean, this is, much, much more. And we hired a guy, Tom Koontz, who's a former New York Times reporter, investigative guy to run it. And, Paul Sperry is one of the guys who's part of the investigative team but there are a number of others. And so, we're publishing on Real Clear Investigations, I would say, a few times a week now. And, all of that stuff is available to be reprinted with attribution. In fact, we've got a sort of mini syndication service that we're sending it out to folks all around the country. And it's free because it's funded through the foundation. So it's not a revenue stream for us. It's done for the public. Well, good.
The articles that publishers might select are not the ones that come from like City Journal or, New York Post or whatever. They come from Real Clear Investigations. Those are the ones.
Correct.
There's one, War Threatens Ukraine, Auto Empire of Biden Mega Donor Urging Greater U.S. Role. That's from Paul Sperry. He's great. New Advanced Public Education Compare with Brand Equity. That's by Vincent Bolesky. That's good. I mean, all these offerings are just so important. I really like them. And I just want to thank you.
Well, and while we're on that subject, let me give a shout out to Carl Cannon and Susan Crabtree. So one of the things that we're doing is a special series on religious freedom and religious liberty around the world. And Susan Crabtree, who's one of our national political writers, has been covering this topic for, 20, 30 years. And it's a area of particular interest to Carl Cannon as well. And so she's written a number of stories about this over the past few weeks. And then they just unveiled it's a four-part series. Part one, we ran on the site on Wednesday, titled The Long Road to Confronting China's War on Religion. And very, very thorough, thoughtful, and important stuff. So if you have any interest in that subject at all, go read Susan and Carl, and I think you'll be impressed by the depth and breadth of their coverage of that topic.
And that's it. realclearinvestigations.com for people who want to find more, but also on the main page upper left, there's a link to it as well on Real Clear Politics, which
correct and the religious freedom series we're running on Real Clear Politics. So that's, you can find that there.
Thanks, Tom, for all you've done for us, for me, and for the Chicago Way podcast.
Always good to have you.
Thanks for being here.
Absolutely.
So for Tom Bevin, writer, thinker, co-founder, and boss of RealClearPolitics.com. For Jeff Carlin, future physics teacher who got very excited about discussing future teaching. And for me, John Cass, editor-in-chief of my favorite website, johncassnews.com. Thanks for joining us on another edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.